vote suppression machinery that's being run by the Republican Party. I'm not being partisan. This, you know, I'm an investigative reporter. I've been following this guy for years around the planet.
Greg, I want to thank you very much for being with us from L.A. Journalist and Puffin Foundation Fellow for Investigative Reporting. His recent piece will link to Rubio's billionaire wins ransom from Argentina. And that does it for the show. Democracy Now! Has three job openings: broadcast engineer, a director of finance and operations, and a director of development. Visit democracynow.org for more information. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7:59. Coming up, Positively Revolting Talk Radio. Right after this.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Winter Blues Festival, Saturday, March 12th at the Elks Lodge and Ballroom, 13121 Southeast McLaughlin Boulevard in Milwaukee. Performing at this year's festival will be Candy Kane, Kara Granger, Robin Barrett, and Coyote Kings with Tiff Dames and more. The Winter Blues Festival is a benefit for the Oregon Food Bank and United by Music North America. It all happens on Saturday, March 12th at the Elks Lodge and Ballroom on McLaughlin in Milwaukee. Doors open at 2:30 and the music starts at 3. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What happens when Oz and Wonderland collide in a twisted brain of a mad composer? A freaking musical, of course. KBOO is proud to present Nick T. Devlin's new musical, Alice Trippin' Sixes. It's a strange and unusual music odyssey. Flying monkeys, scarecrows, jokers, and even midday tokers. Oh, this ain't your normal musical, man. It's a far-out psychedelic trip into the mind of the mad. This is going to be one wild and crazy musical event. Alice Trippin' Sixes, Thursday, March 31st at 10 p.m. on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
What would you have instead?
No, this is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Good morning. It's about 4 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are, in fact, listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm here. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And you're there, too, because otherwise you wouldn't be hearing this. So we are excited this morning to be talking about Strike Debt Portland and a debtors assembly that is happening tomorrow. But before we do that, I do want to announce, as somebody has asked me to announce, there is a Clean Air Coalition that is happening. It's a community near Precision Cast Parts. All Air Toxics community meeting south. Hold on. Oop. There it goes. The screen changes. And I narrate my process. There we go. So it's on Tuesday, March 15th at 5 o'clock. Air Toxics community meeting, South Portland and Milwaukee. It is created for the benefit of the South Portland air quality. Let's look at that. So that's March 15th, 5 to 9 p.m. at the Lane Middle School. And that's at 7200 Southeast 60th Avenue in Portland. So please, if you are interested in going to that, avail yourself of this information. We will also put this on the Positively Revolting Facebook page, which you can, of course, find at facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. Again, that's Tuesday the 15th, 5 to 9 p.m. at the Lane Middle School. Air Toxics community meeting. Seems like an important thing to get involved with. Just my guess.
If you breathe.
If you breathe. If you like air. And God knows I do. I like air very much, and I think it's important.
I like clean air.
Well, you know, any air is better than no air, but clean air is the best air of all. All right. Good morning. As I was saying, it's about 6 minutes after 8 in the morning now. And, you know, many times on Positively Revolting, we've had conversations about many ways that the corporate elite attempt to keep the rest of us on the hook, to keep us dependent on their systems, to keep their system rolling on as unsustainable and absolutely, how do we say backwards, as it may be. One of the very best examples of this is, in fact, our debt system. With each debt paid, we impoverish ourselves and enrich our financiers. And that just doesn't seem right. It seems to me to be the antithesis of what needs to happen. It strikes me as indenturing ourselves to our new corporate masters. So enter Strike Debt. Strike Debt is a movement of debt resistors fighting for economic justice, for liberation, based on principles of anti-oppression, of autonomy, of democratic decision-making and direct action. And there are local chapters of this national movement. And we are lucky enough this morning to have two local organizers of Strike Debt Portland with us, Portia Norton and Daniel Hong. Thank you both very much this morning for joining us. Oh, look at that. Engineering pixie. Yes. Try it again.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
Ah, I can hear him now.
Let's go ahead and just start out with an overview of Strike Debt itself. Portia, do you want to just talk about the movement nationally and what kind of debt are you talking about?
That's what I find so incredible at Strike Debt. There's no limits on what kind of debt that they strive to abolish. Medical debt, student debt, consumer debt. Foreclosures is also a big issue in this debt-driven economy. And they're striving to abolish it in all forms.
And why is that important? I mean, it's like, I often hear the argument from people that haven't looked past the surface. Well, it's your debt, right? If you'd only been responsible, you wouldn't have that debt. So it's your responsibility to pay it off. What's wrong with that idea? And we only have an hour.
It is so systemically wrong. I personally see it as a reason why this country was created, to get out from underneath the bankers, the creditors that have suppressed people for ages. And
but they just followed, didn't they? I mean, it goes right everywhere. I mean, it has to do with, it's such a worldwide thing. There's the World Bank.
Absolutely.
The whole global corporate hegemony.
Absolutely. There's so many other countries that are suppressed by the World Bank. And I would like to see America eventually help resolve those issues as well as its citizens' issues, making them feel like they're indebted and suppressed to the system that they don't deserve to be suppressed by. They deserve to thrive. They deserve to have a home. They deserve to be educated and have free health care. And that's what I see in Strike Debt.
Well, on the Strike Debt webpage, it says, you are not alone.
Yeah. And I just want to say that, like, the banks, the financiers, like, they're diametrically opposed to people's interests. You know, it's because they don't want people to pay their debts, and they don't want people to get out of debt because they profit out of the interest.
Why would that be, Daniel?
Because they profit out of the interest that people take out these loans, often under coercive conditions, and the economy does not give people the opportunity to participate in the economy so that they can even come up with the means to pay back the debt. And for us, you know, at Strike Debt Portland, for the Strike Debt movement, we see debt as a very powerful social tool to be accountable to one another and to feel obligated to one another as a society. And we want to tap in that power and change it from serving the 1%, serving the economic elite above us, and to actually turn that and redefine debt to being obligation to our friends, our families, our communities, and our civic values. So it's part of our Strike Debt mission. And it's imperative that we challenge debt for what it is now, being oppressive and bent on system. And so that's one thing that people who have a surface level critique about debt resistors need to understand, that the banks are not on your side.
Well, also these days, everything you get depends on your credit rating. The amount of, if you're going to get car insurance, it's not what your record is as a driver, it's what your credit rating. That's how they determine how much you're going to pay. If you're going to try to rent a house, it's not a rent of dwelling. It's not what your record is as a renter. It's what your credit rating is.
Yeah, and it's even about your job employment, too. It's starting to become more and more difficult to get a job without your employer checking your credit record. And
even to rent a car.
Mm-hmm. And what is a credit rating, and what is it, and who is it being rated by, and is there any control that people have to actually define for themselves what is financial responsibility in their lives, that from the money that they pursued? It's like all of these questions are left out of the equation because it's not about people making economic decisions or about financial responsibility. It's about codifying how people are loyal to the system.
And enforcing that loyalty on point of, you know, not being able to get housing, not being able to get a job, not being able to get basic necessities at this point, again, with that credit rating. It's an interesting thing, I find. It's like, okay, we've made up out of whole cloth this abstract concept that is your credit rating. Mm-hmm. And at this point, and more and more and more, as you were just saying, it is becoming that touchstone that is like a key to access basic areas of life at this point. So it's this abstract thing. You have to jump through many, many of their hoops that are not serving your interests or your community's interests, mm-hmm. In order to maintain that credit rating or build it in the first place. And it is sort of the system of indentured servitude. I mean, that's how it looks in my brain. we've interviewed John DeGraff often on this show, and he is the author of Affluenza, and he's also a part of the Take Back Your Time movement. And you know, we talk about the system in terms of the unsustainable hamster wheel, right? Mm-hmm. That you're told that your goal, what's important, what you need to succeed and have a happy life, is always outside you, and it's a part of the system that is dangled just before your face, and you're just always going to be on this treadmill trying to get to it, but never actually attaining it, and that is how the system remains status quo. That is how the status quo exists. it's all a part of that. And I think that the Strike Debt movement is really one of the brightest, best, and most serious threats to that system I've seen yet. And I think that it's a hugely important movement.
It really articulates like how exactly Wall Street is in our everyday lives. And because Strike Debt came out of Occupy Wall Street in 2012, asking the question, okay, how does Wall Street control our everyday lives? It's through debt.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And the lack of knowledge about their debt, that's part of the scams, that no one knows how much their credit score affects them, affects their housing, affects their jobs, until that moment hits them, until they're already at that point in the road of their life and they realize, oh, I can't get a car. Mm-hmm. Oh, now I'm losing my house because of my medical debt, because yep. now I'm becoming elderly. And that's something, as a grassroots activist, that I'd like to see change in Portland, mm-hmm. that I'd like to see change in Oregon and across the nation, is simply people's awareness about this scam, about this issue of creditors buying up people's debt and constantly reselling debt, even if the debt has already been paid off. That's something that people need to look out for with creditors, is recognize, hey, if I've already paid this debt, don't pay it. Report right. these people.
And we want, and we also want debtors, you know, who, we want debtors who are interested in organizing with us and interested in bargaining on a collective level by meeting with other debtors against among a common creditor, and to even find like economic loopholes that can give them a base to and leverage to say that, hey, our interests matter too.
Well, and that actually is something that some chapters of the Strike Debt movement have done. In the Rolling Jubilee, I believe it was called, the idea is, as you're saying, you know, creditors throw old debts together, right? And then they just sort of, they keep selling them around to this whole system of financiers and bottom feeders. And so old debt, unpaid debt, gets bundled into these packages. And it's like, oh, I'll take a chance on that package. I'll take this package of $1 million worth of debt for $1.50. And, you know, I've got like my warehouse full of people that are just going to robocall all day long. Mm-hmm. It's not really a warehouse of people. It's robocall. You know, yeah. And then if I actually get a live one on the line, you know, they'll get, you know, shuttled along until they actually talk to a person. And then we can try to squeeze, negotiate payment for that debt out of them. And eventually they take this gamble and they figure they're going to make more than $1.50 on it. Mm-hmm. And I was impressed as all get out a couple years ago when I saw chapters of Strike Debt and the Rolling Jubilee. Buy up some of those bundles of bottom feeding debt for very little money and forgive it, mm-hmm. making $1 million worth of debt disappear. That is an inspiring moment. Right. And what, you know, how can people replicate that?
You know, so just to clarify, I think the Rolling Jubilee has since been transitioned out, and because with a new project by Strike Debt called Debt Collective, which is organizing debtors and to connect them online and to work together to dispute their debts. In terms of replicating debt cancellation, I think there's actually an organization whose mission is to cancel medical debt. And that was kind of formed in inspiration of Strike Debt. And while Strike Debt realizes that while fundraising efforts have its limits, that it's not the final solution or the only thing that we can do. It is really important and really educational and groundbreaking for people when they find out that their debt isn't isolated to them, mm-hmm. and that their debt is not it's not trapping them into an economic situation.
And it's not who they are mm-hmm. as human beings. Yes. That's just so important.
You are not your credit rating?
Yeah. You are not a loan, as they say.
I have like this zero credit rating, which impresses and terrifies people mm-hmm. when I walk in and start talking to folks about, yeah, I'd like to X, Y, or Z. This came up 10 years ago when we were looking at buying a house. And, you know, my partner, questionable credit rating. Mm. Me, zero. She got the loan. I was told to, like, never put my name anywhere near it. Questionable, better than zero. Okay.
So you're not a questionable person.
And well, I'd like to think I'm more than zero. More than zero. I question a lot of things. Anyways, let's...
Should we take a caller?
I was going to say, let's re-ID. Let's re-ID that show. Put excellent. Out that phone number. Invite excellent. People to join us. Because this hour is going to go by fast. There's so much to talk about in this. 503-231-8187 is, in fact, the number to call here to join us on the air. You can also follow along on Facebook, like our fan page there, Positively Revolting. You can also follow along in the Twitterverse, where I've been having an ongoing and never-ending argument with a couple of folks. But you can read those tweets and oh so much more that we post that's more interesting than my throwing of pearls before swine. But that's okay. We can find us there at Positive Revolt. And see if I can actually keep myself to 140 characters. It's not my strong suit. Let's go ahead and
Brian,
talk to a caller, shall we?
Brian.
That's me.
Good morning. You are on the air.
I am. Good. You really hit a pressure point for me today, and I'd like to get in touch with your guest later, because the U.S. credit rating system has needled, like the medical system, has needled me since ever I came here. And, you know, it can destroy your life, just by having a bit of bad luck, especially, and it's linked to, like, the fact that medical costs are the biggest cause of bankruptcy in this country.
Absolutely.
And, so I've been hit with both, and I lost a very promising, a very profitable architectural business just and the recession came on top of that, and it bankrupted us, and we had insurance. So now what it does, and it's like it forces you into the arms of loan sharks. I had to get some equipment for my pottery studio, and I'm paying 26% interest on that. And, it's killing us. And I can't, I tried to get a loan from our bank just a couple of weeks ago to get rid of it, and they won't help us because of this damn credit rating. And, you know, they say, oh, yeah, we're friendly, we'll talk to you, we'll help you, baloney. You're stuck with it. So I'd really like to hear if your friend is, in fact, your guest is, in fact, forming some kind of coalition. I'd like to get be part of it. So I'll take any more discussion off the air. I just wanted to give you my, unfortunate experiences.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are others that would like to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brian. I mean, in fact, that is such a common story, and that is, in fact, why Strike Debt is here.
Right? And at the end, could we give our contact information?
Please, you give your contact
You can do it now.
Anytime
you want.
Yeah, well, if this individual's on Facebook, find us on Facebook, Strike Debt Portland. And
under groups.
Under groups, yes. And if he wants to get in touch with me personally, I can have my email be on, say, the Positively Revolting page on the...
And he could do it. Can he get in touch with you if he messaged you from Strike Tape Portland Facebook?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm on there all the time.
Yeah,
so
that's how I
do. As well as my friend Portia.
And Portia as well, yes.
And we do actually have links to Strike Tape Portland already on our... on our Facebook page, so you can find them easily that way. And please do. You're doing something exciting And tomorrow, you are having a debtors' assembly, and KBOO's a sponsor of that and helping to spread the word. Let's go ahead. It's not the first debtors' assembly you've had. Portia, can you let us know what is a debtors' assembly? What is that? Why do people go to those? Let's just start with the what is it. We'll move on from there.
It's a grassroots assembly of people getting together anywhere. We've thrown them in parks before. We've thrown them in community centers before. And it's a place where debtors can come and recognize that they are not alone. That's L-O-A-N, loan. And it becomes very powerful. It's a place for people, just like our previous caller, can get off their chests their experiences and how it has affected them. And almost like a support group, it becomes this experience of exchanging.
I was going to say there's probably a lot of information exchanged.
Right, exchanging battle wounds with these creditors, yeah, and their debt too. And I just wanted to mention to our previous caller that 70% of foreclosures are medical debt related. So it's incredible. Once you get into that pool of debt, you just continually stay buried in it.
Yeah, it's like the quicksand Odette. You know, and debt is a weirdly taboo subject. So there's this idea that everyone who finds themselves in unsupportable debt have no one but themselves to blame, right? Mm-hmm. And so we don't talk to each other about struggling with debt. And we don't, you know, it's like there's an element of shame to it. And as I mentioned, you know, right off the get-go, that there's this attitude from some, again, who have not looked past the very thin surface to say, oh, well, you know, it is your own damn fault. You know, you shouldn't have got that credit card. You shouldn't have had that heart attack and ended up in the hospital and had those medical bills. You should have had better insurance. Oh, wait, you did have insurance? Oh, yeah, should have, you know, anything. Should have, would have, could have. And that seems to be victim blaming to me. I mean, you know, really, it's not looking past the surface and it's not taking into the reality into account, really. So it seems to me that the debtors assembly is really a way to break through that shame and isolation. It's a wonderful way to actually get viscerally that it's not just happening to you. And the slogan, you are not alone, is one of the best plays on words since we've come up with the name of this show. So I just got to say, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I want to say that the debtor assembly, like for this one, it'll be opened for all debts. You know, what's interesting in our current political climate is that one debt in particular, student debt, has actually gone up to the presidential discourse. About because it's become a $1.34 trillion crisis, and an entire generation of millennials have been grown up this way and saying like, oh, is apparently this is how America affords college now, and
or doesn't
afford college, exactly. But we want this assembly to be inclusive for all debt because we hope to have, you know, people from all generations who are affected by debt, because different types of debt meet people at different times of their lives.
Well, absolutely. And student debt is one of those debts that tends to stay with you, right, for most of your life. From what I understand, you know, a person going through, I'm sure you actually probably have these facts and figures. How much debt is an average student, you know, say going to a public college, around? How much debt do you think people tend to get into?
Oh, goodness. Let's see, your lawyers could come out of school with 200 grand in debt.
Okay, we'll be sympathetic.
With interest. Okay. And let's see, some of your other professions that isn't a lengthy time of school, like your four-year degrees, you can come out of school with at least like 50 grand in debt. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible. I know college students who are looking at living in a house of roommates for the rest of their lives. not able to ever sign a lease because of how their student debt has destroyed their credit rating. And that's scary. That's almost instantaneously condemning our millennial generation to be homeless for the rest of their lives, because I don't know how else they're going to be able to afford anything in their life without getting some sort of cancellation of this debt.
Or just thinking that it's charming to live with six or seven or eight people in a small flat for the rest of your lives, because Friends was such a good show. And, you know, I lie. I never actually saw it.
It gets
it's
old.
Okay. You know, I'm just, you know, isn't that, maybe that's the new future. You know, as somebody who's lived in collective living for most of my life, and in fact, I still do.
I feel you.
Oh, my God.
Oh, she likes it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, okay, I do. I love people. But, you know, it'd be interesting to, you know, maybe just look at not making a society where that's actually necessary, because everyone's saddled with, you know, $75,000 worth of student debt because they decided to get a history degree. You know, I'm just saying. So it's 8:30 in the morning. You can join us. This is Positively Revolting. We are talking with Strike Debt Portland organizers Portia Norton and Daniel Hong. And you can join us at 503-231-8187.
Just like Michael did.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk to Michael now. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have an idea about student debt. I teach at a college, and you take your average 17-year-old, and they're too young to have an idea about long-term consequences. So some college comes along and sells them on the idea, go to college, it'll be great. And 4 years later, they graduate with a double major in useless studies and worthless studies and discover that nothing they have learned has equipped them to make any kind of money at all. And now they're stuck with, you know, $100,000 of debt or whatever. So my idea would be that if a college sells you on this debt and it turns out there is nothing you can do with what they provided you with to earn money to pay the debt back, then the debt should go back to the college and the college should have to pay it.
It's a very interesting
brilliant
idea.
No, yeah. I think just to respond to that, I want to kind of push back the idea that some about playing into the debt game and saying that some that we should that economic return should be kind of the foundation of our educational system, or what is more, which is worth more of a degree than others. 'Cause at Strike Debt, we value education so much so
right?
that we want it to be affordable and free, and that we want it to be high quality and democratic as well. So,
and not all education has to do with, I know I thought for a minute, Michael, you were going to say that people should all go to trade school. Not that there's anything
sort of
wrong
what,
with trade school.
That's sort of what it's sounding like.
But what is useful, knowledge in itself is useful. I don't know, knowing how to...
Well, I mean,
an idea of history, context, geography.
We're sort of seeing what lack of that is doing these days.
Yeah, the dumbing down isn't pretty.
Well, I think if the colleges were going to be honest about it, like they should be for Truth in Lending, and say, okay, we're going to sell you these 4 years' experience for $100,000, and it will be so worthwhile to your soul that the fact that you will have no better way of earning money when you get out of here than you did when you came in. If that's okay with you, then, you know, go into debt for $100,000 and have this for your experience.
But, I got to say, this is why I think education needs to be free. Because, you know, the entire society, your community benefits as we educate ourselves, as we are able to have critical thinking.
And I wanted to actually comment about... this does make an interesting point about college recruitment, is that from our experience, the for-profit schools, which is the most notorious to get people in debt because they're literally profiting off of the federal government in the form of student loans, their pitch is the inverse, is that they try to get students in into 9-month programs, 8-month programs, on the trades in like nursing or culinary or art design or other like tangible or cosmetology and other like tangible work skills. And the inverse of like, you know, come to our school because you're going to make an economic return, and tries to base, you know, try to woo students in on that economic return when, in fact, their interests are completely reversed into keeping students into debt, you know, and to take out as much loans as possible because that's their bottom line. That's actually their bottom line. So, yeah, and of course, you know, if those colleges were honest, they would tell about like the 50% or higher default rating for student loans, the abysmal graduation rates, the terrible assistance on finding jobs, just the low quality education that they're receiving. And so on both of the ends of like, because I go to a liberal arts school, and what the caller's kind of describing could perfectly fit into a lot of degrees at my school. But thankfully their pitch is not, at least their pitch is a little more honest, because it's the other part of like colleges trying to pitch to students based on their economic desperation, but instead is a kind of a bait and switch where they are into debt.
Rightio. Yeah, I just got to say, education for education's sake, right? Like, we are thinking beings, and we are, in fact, our society is better off as we all decide to grow personally, as we develop our skills and actually gain context of the world around us. That's a public good, period, and that's why education should be free, in my book. That's what I say. So vote for me when I run for president someday. That was a joke. By the way, we are up for talking with another caller. 503-231-8187 is the number to call in. And let's talk to Mary. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. So speaking about honesty in this context, I just wanted to bring up one point, something that's always kind of bothered me. I've been in school for 7 years now. I'm about to start graduate school, so I'm in a ton of debt. It's just going to get worse. But just the rhetoric and the language they use, you know, you get the email, sign into your account, accept your financial aid award.
Award, I love it.
You know, and even just financial aid, like, you're not aiding me, you're not aiding anybody.
It's like foreign
you're
aid,
making,
yeah.
No, come
and
on.
You profit off of me. You're not awarding me anything. And, you know, I think for a lot of people that maybe first generation to go to college may not have too many mentors guiding them through the process, it's misleading. You know, I mean, yeah. I knew going into it, I'm like, okay, I'm not really getting any sort of award. Hmm. But, you know, I think for some people that are not as experienced and don't have people in their lives to guide them through the process could, you know, get the wrong idea. But, yeah, that's all I have to say.
Mary, thank you so much for calling in and saying it.
Thank you.
All right, take good care.
Thanks.
503-231-8187, the number to call. Yeah, student debt, medical debt, consumer debt. Some people are like, you know, I've noticed that there's sort of a debt hierarchy for sympathies for people, again, that haven't looked very very deeply, thinking, oh, well, you know, yeah, sure, medical debt, that's most unfortunate, and we got to do something about that, you know.
The rest
debt,
of you deadbeats.
Student debt, well,
it.
Maybe we need to, you know, check out some student debt. But consumer debt, well, you really debt, that's really your own lookout. You know,
you're just getting tires for your car.
Right. Well, you cut up your cards and have some self-control, live within your means. But actually, poverty is really, really expensive, right? And we know that it actually costs more to be poor because you end up getting fines for all manner of things that folks of means don't actually think about. Mm-hmm. You know, if you happen to come up, you know, $10 short on a check you just wrote, your overdraft fee is $35 to $40, right? And that's going to make the next five checks bounce, and you get overdraft fees on all of them, and suddenly, you know, you're talking some real money. You're talking about needing to, oh heck, people's EBT, food stamp programs were cut. Mm.
Because $200 a month is pretty extravagant for buying food.
Yeah,
I'd say.
Yeah. So now you get $100 a month, maybe $136 perhaps, and you know, and maybe that's not actually enough to feed a person for a month. Maybe, you know, with some other sundries that one needs in one's life, you know, food stamps don't cover toilet paper. So, you know, at some point, debt becomes a reality for people, right? And it becomes one of those things that you end up getting consumer debt because you're trying to make it to your next paycheck, or you're going to that payday advance loan shark with the predatory rates. You know, and these are it's sort of a poor tax. I mean, really, that's how I look at those incredible rates for loan sharks, and how a lot of people end up getting into that consumer debt. It wasn't because, well, they really wanted the next, you know, what, you know, it's like they're just trying to make it go until the next month. And so putting that reality out there, just wanting to say, really, we're talking all debt and not picking and choosing a righteous debt from those damned irresponsible folks that shouldn't have got into that debt in the first place. I just wanted to clarify, make that very clear to people. You're both so cute nodding on the radio. Radio's a verbal thing. I know it's early. I know.
Let's go to Grace.
Yeah, let's do that. Good morning, Grace.
Hi.
Hi, good morning.
I just wanted to say, love your show. I listen to it on the way to work. Great. Gets me real fired up before I go to my nonprofit, very little paying job. But anyways.
Right on, sister. I'm there with you.
I just wanted to say, on the subject of college debt, I was very lucky, I guess, in a sense, you can say I was lucky because I have no college debt for my undergraduate degree because I was poor enough to get a lot of financial aid that was not loan, like grants and all that kind of stuff.
Actual financial aid, right.
Yeah, like real financial aid that actually got me through college with very little debt that I had already paid off by this time. I'm 25. It's been a few years. But I just think that a very huge issue is that there's not enough education in college or before college or whatever. There's just not enough focus on financial literacy. I think that a lot of college students go through college kind of like, oh, I have these loans, but my parents are paying my rent right now, or I just don't know, you know, I don't have these worries about all this other financial stuff. And then suddenly they graduate and it's like, oh, bam, I have this like $75,000 debt that I have to deal with, and I don't know how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not getting a job for 6 months or up to a year or whatever, years after I graduate. And so I have no idea how to deal with this. I have no idea how to budget my money. And having grown up in, like, it's kind of funny because I'm lucky, quote unquote, in a sense, because I grew up very poor. And so I had to learn from an early age how to budget my money and how to use my money to get by. But a lot of students, like, even though they're lucky in the sense that they got through college with all of this help from their parents or whatever, they never got that financial literacy that I had to learn kind of the hard way. Like, mm-hmm. But it shouldn't have to be like that. Everyone should be able to have this financial knowledge, and it should be a huge focus, like starting in high school or even middle school. And it's just not there here in America, I don't think, in my
opinion. Thank you, Grace. That's a very good comment.
Thanks.
I think about that a lot. You know, K through 12 should absolutely be the basics of how to function in this world, including your own financial management and independence. Honestly, I didn't learn a lot about what my credit score was.
We don't want to bother the children with that.
Checkbook. Right, exactly. It's too stressful. Don't talk to the children about it. They just have to somehow feel and not quite understand why their parents are so worried when they open up that little book.
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't, you know, in high school in Portland, public school system, at least in the 80s, personal finance was a required credit.
That doesn't happen now.
It doesn't. I was just like, I'm a little out of touch.
So
I gotta admit.
So is civics, and that's
true.
And that kind and that kind of financial literacy, like, strikes to the heart of the second myth that you are not alone, A-O-L-A-L-O-N-E, that your debt is, that you're not that it's not the best that people be alone in finding this out and be alone in and isolated about their financial situation, and that they are alone in having their debt dominate their entire lives without any input or support. And also too that like people's debts, they don't just affect those individuals, they affect the people around them, right. They affect larger society, and which then helps like people then it helps people imagine about debt on a corporate level in terms of cities, in terms of nations, you know, who are taking out loans with the same institutions that individuals are taking out. You know, elected officials, they may have this ingrained in their heads, like, oh, you know, our city's alone with our loans,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that they can't organize, so.
Well, let's go ahead and give information about strike the debtors' assembly tomorrow, because that seems like a perfect tie-in, to realize we're all in this together.
Absolutely. And at this debtors' assembly, we're not going to teach people what to think. We like to help assist them how to think about these things critically for themselves, unlike some of the cool schooling systems right now. And so please join us tomorrow at the debtors' assembly in my friend's backyard in St. John's. The address is 6805 North Macrum Street, and that's in St. John's. I will be there
from 3:30 to 5:30, right?
Yes, I will be there facilitating tomorrow.
Awesome.
And we'll give a little spiel and explanation of what strike debt is, how to get involved, and then we're opening the floor for debtors to share their stories.
Yeah, it'll be powerful.
Excellent.
All right. Let's go ahead and talk to Peacemon. You're on the air.
Thank you. And their Sky is with me, our new little one love bird, so he may chirp in here. But my grandfather was a bricklayer. My father is a bricklayer. And I am a bricklayer. How come I don't own a home? Ezra Pound. And for a clue, you might look at Zeitgeist, and it will explain how a contractor will make maybe $50,000 on a home, but the banker who lends him the money will make $400,000 just for sitting in a chair for a few some decades. Yes. I'd like to point out that it's often on forms, it's talk about the vocabulary or the context is it's always put own or rent, but you don't own that home until you make all those payments for 30 years, and so it really should say mortgage or rent.
Rent from bank or landlord.
Yeah.
And then I'm playing on the alone. I would go with A-L-L-O-N-E, and that would be all own. What an idea.
Uh-huh.
Because, the natives didn't think you could own land. That was a ridiculous idea. Who could, and it's could own air or water, but they're really doing this in a sense. If you pollute it so bad that people have to buy it, just like people have to buy water now because their tap water's no good. Who did that?
Yeah, excellent. Excellent point.
Okay, another one just about banks, because I haven't had many bank accounts. I've been in business for myself. And in any case, every time I would get an overdraft, I would notice that the largest check I had written was first.
Yeah.
And I would call them, and they say, and I've done this a number of times, and they say, well, we process the checks in the order that they come in.
No, they don't.
If that's the case, they cannot always, they'll say, I've had a number of overdraft checks. I'm not bragging, but I'm just having experience, okay? Mm-hmm. So that it's mathematically impossible for the largest check to always come in first, but if it does, then all the little checks that come in after it will bounce, whereas if they did it the other way around...
Yeah, I've forgotten about that. Thanks for...
Maybe
yes.
Only one would bounce, mm-hmm. See? Okay. Yeah.
Dang.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, thanks very much, Peace Mom, for calling in this morning.
You got it. And Yimby, yes, in my backyard. Go for it.
Oh, thank you. Come on. Debtors Assembly, yeah.
Awesome.
All right, thanks very much. And again, that debtors assembly tomorrow on North Macrum. For those who didn't grow up in St. John's, Macrum is just off of Willamette Boulevard. It's not a street that a lot of people in the city know. I'm just, you know, some
and
people.
And it's 6805.
6805 North Macrum. It's just off Willamette Boulevard. It's before you actually get to that little railway bridge that gets you straight into the heart of St. John's. We also call that Ida Street, I think. Yes, that is where I grew up. like blocks away. Let's see. We've got 12 minutes left. Bases are pretty loaded. Let's go ahead and talk to David. Good morning, David. You're on the air.
Yeah, I got pretty excited. I thought that maybe you were a coalition buying up debt on pennies on the dollar and then helping people out. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
That has happened. I mean, that was a tactic. It was called the Rolling Jubilee. Mm-hmm. And... Oh. That we perhaps you missed earlier in the show, there are groups that do that. There are many approaches in this struggle.
Yeah, and we can have those, and we can include those resources on the web as well. And
that's what you're doing.
Yeah, and what we're doing. I mean, what we want to do is organize debtors, and we want people to dispute their debt and strike back their debt as well, because we understand that fundraising has its limits, and that we know that unless people change fundamentally how the economic system works.
What do you think of fractional reserve lending that puts the entire country in debt as we create new dollars out of debt?
I'm going to go ahead and jump in there and say, I think this entire economic system is, in fact, capricious, arbitrary, and serves the elite. We need to actually take it down. That's my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm. We need greenbacks. Well, I'll let you speak. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks very much, David. You can, in fact, stay in touch with Positively Revolting throughout the week on Facebook. You can also follow along in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. You can also call in 503-231-8187, the numbers to call. What kind of stories have you heard at previous debtors' assemblies? What has struck you about previous debtors' assemblies?
This lady, she stole my heart on this one. Mm. So both her and her husband had student debt. They started a family. And a couple years ago, there was a story about them in their car accident over the Hawthorne Bridge. And so what happened to this lady... See, now I'm going to get all choked up.
I was going to say, yeah.
We're in Holiday Park. She stands up, starts sharing the story. And what happened in this car accident is her husband passed. And so she's already, you know...
Devastated.
Absolutely devastated from her husband passing. And so now she has her student debt, his student debt, and the medical debt from the car accident, and with children, what is she supposed to do?
Right?
My mind was blown. My heart went out to this woman. And that is why I keep doing debtors' assemblies, because at least we could give her the privilege to be heard by other people.
So she inherited her husband's student debt.
She did.
What a lovely inheritance. Oh my God.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Lovely gift from the bank.
So you're not only dealing with deep grief, but suddenly you're dealing with financial devastation as well.
Right.
As if.
And that put her over 70 grand in debt and rising.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. What next, Lynn? What next? This is what I want to know. The reason I ask this is because, in fact, My computer screen is frozen. Do we have calls, Lynn?
Oh, let me see.
I could try to be subtle.
Right at the moment, we don't have calls, so you are...
One thing I'd like to say...
But Portia wants to talk, so go for it.
So, student debt. Whatever happened to the value of apprenticeships? I think about this as an artist. I was going to a private art school and decided to drop out because I was tired of learning what to think and how to do things. I wanted to be free and able to think critically for myself with, you know, more accurate histories put in front of me and a better way to network with people of all ages, yes. Which I didn't get to network with all ages in college in a dorm. And I think about what must have happened and how did the creditors create this propaganda to get people totally oblivious to the fact what happened throughout history to apprenticeships. That's how people used to get jobs and their accreditation. And I think there's a lot of value there, and I hope that comes back.
And also just like whatever happened to investment by the government to public schools? What happened to...
Well, considering education as a public good instead right, exactly. of as a vocational preparedness.
Yeah, or a private good.
It started in the 80s.
Yeah. Even earlier, in the 60s.
I was part of going to college when it was $169 a semester tuition. Mm. Or in California, it was free. Mm. You could get... But what happened is there was a lot of student unrest.
Yes.
There was a lot of thinking. When I first was going to school back in the dark ages, we used to mock the Japanese because they taught to testing, and we always talked about how American education was about critical thinking. Mm. But you see... And it was way more about mm-hmm. critical thinking then.
At the time, yes.
At the time. Not now.
No.
Mm. I know. So I'm really sad about what has happened with that. But what it looked like to me is it sort of started with Reagan. Mm. And we wanted to get mm-hmm. government out of things.
And actually Reagan, when he was governor of California.
Yes.
Which is much
yes,
earlier.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, mm-hmm. yes.
Yep.
History. It's important.
I was going to say that's the value of history.
Which puts debt into perspective. Where like this is a very modern phenomenon, and it's not
absolutely
inevitable.
Dana.
It's not. Mm-hmm. It's not like
Well, actually, there has been debt for a long time, and we didn't mm-hmm. used to have debtors' prisons, but that seems to be a little trend that's coming back.
I was going to say everything old is new again, right?
Everything old is new again.
Daniel, can you speak some to that article about students being arrested by different kinds of officers in the Midwest?
Yeah, so there was a media uproar a couple of weeks ago about U.S. Marshals arresting people for overdue student loans. Unfortunately, there was a lot of misinformation around that, and I do want to kind of clear things up in the air with what National Strike Day people are saying, that that from their perspective, it seems to be very biased towards a biased and kind of fear producing for a lot of students because the situation is a little more complicated because for these individuals who were actually arrested, they had to get a warrant out against them, and actually that was due to like court cases from unrelated things mm-hmm. that got them sent these warrants for authorities to arrest them. It's illegal to arrest someone on the ground simply because they have loans, or even if they're in default. Though we have to look out for the law books, of course, and that doesn't actually make the news. Anyways, but so we want to kind of clear things up in the air and not to, you know, really discern between what information that people need to learn about and what information is just there to scare people, because for national organizers, they're calling BS on a lot of the reporting that's happening on this issue. We're calling it, okay, we think this is just to keep people down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid. We're all doing this together.
Yes.
Absolutely. And that's part of the message of the Debt Collective. Yeah.
Absolutely. Which is the newest. Yeah, the newest project.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go ahead and read a comment from a caller who is not able to call in this morning. She says that her daughter is starting college. I guess it's a comment from a listener, not a caller.
That would be
my
true.
Bad. But Jennifer, thank you, Jennifer, for writing in this morning. My comment is that my daughter is starting college at a university in the fall, and she is actually getting a job, a second job, to pay for her daughter's college so that her daughter won't have the burden of starting out life with debt. She says, although they are applying for grants and financial aid, they're looking at about $10,000 a year. So she's wondering is, why can we apply and receive the loans for education having little or no bad credit? But everything else we get, she just is told to scatter and scram. And she says, for everything else, we get the hose. So that's a little point to ponder this morning.
Yeah. Good question.
Thank you very much, Jennifer, for commenting and writing in, even if you couldn't call. And with that, one more time, how to get a hold of you and Strike Deck Portland.
Strike Debt Portland. You can find us on Facebook's groups under Strike Debt Portland. Myself, Portia, and Daniel Hong, we help manage that page, so you would get in contact with us
just
directly.
Just message you guys?
Just message us, and we will be there.
And for people who don't have Facebook accounts, I can also include my personal email into the body of this week's podcast on kb.fm/positively revolting. Is that right?
Right.
All right. Yes. Excellent. In fact, we'll make sure that is up on our page.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you. And we'll be back next week just before the vernal equinox.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought.